Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. And we got a big show for you tonight. Last week's guest, Brandon Shelton. We only got one question in for him, so we'll have a few more for him tonight, hopefully. We got Buddy in last week. We had a whole show with his buddy. And tonight we got Brandon Shelton. And so both from Oklahoma, these guys with a wrestling background. And Shelton, we just got him to open up a little bit last week about how he got his start in the sport. We also got to talk about a couple UFC fights, one upcoming, one that just happened, the whole card there. Big Bellator card once we get Tom on, but one of the biggest stories this week is boxing, Tony.
And it is.
It's not really the Gennady Golovkin fight, but it's on the same card. There was a big, no pun intended, heavyweight fight. Magomed Abdusalamov is still hospitalized, from what I've read. They were talking about he was in a coma, forced coma, and now they're saying that he had a stroke.
See, I've been following this, and actually I was going to look at it shortly after we got on the air. It was a good fight. You know, obviously Abdusalamov was the favorite. You know, he was 18 knockouts coming in. You get a glittering record like that, and, you know, of course, that opens people's eyes. But he was kind of a good fighter in Mike Perez, Irish Mike Perez, as they call him, a Cuban-based fighter living in Ireland now. And Magomed, it was concerned after with the first round because he seemed really unsure when he went back to his corner from the very beginning. Like, is my nose broken? I think my nose is broken. And you could already see, there were some signs of doubt. But he landed some big shots. He had two big southpaws out there, two guys with good punches. And he buckled Perez a couple times. And by the second play round, I was like, oh, man, it looks like he's starting to get to him a little bit. And then I remember even Kellerman saying, down the fourth, Perez was like, he's starting to get tired. And he asked, damn, Magomed looks like he's breathing hard, too. Because Perez really took over in the second half of the fight. And I know Magomed was his cheekbone was banged up pretty good. It was swollen pretty bad. They were trying to speculate if he had a broken orbital socket. But there was at one point, like, he went back, and you could tell his spirit didn't want, you know, to quit. But you could tell, like, he knew something wasn't right. Even some of the things he said to his trainer. And it reminded me one time I was a teammate with a Lock Haven. Big, husky, strong kid. But, you know, he was about 5'9", 215 pounds. Like I said, he wasn't really that talented of a boxer, but he was big. He was strong. He had a good chin, a lot of heart. And in sparring sessions, I couldn't hurt the kid. I hit him so hard. I threw my back out one time hitting him so hard. And I remember one time, it was actually his last fight, I think it was, fighting a Mansfield, and he was fighting a kid that was a 265-pound heavyweight. And it was a competitive fight. The kid from Shippensburg won. And I remember talking to Bob after the fight, and all he kept saying was, did I get knocked out? Did I get knocked out? I'm like, no, Bob, you didn't go down. You were fine. They didn't even give you a standing in count. Tony, did I get knocked out? And every 2 minutes he was asking me, did I get knocked out? What round did he knock me out? And I said, Bob, you didn't get knocked out. What the fuck are you talking about? And he kept saying it over and over and over. And now, that was today, I probably would have ran right to the doctor. I mean, I didn't know, and I was actually getting annoyed. Like, Jesus Christ, Bob, you didn't get knocked the fuck out. You know, it was a good fight. You lost the decision. Get over it. Now thinking about, you know, now you hear more about concussions and brain injuries and things like that. That raises a red flag. And I think Magomed's actions in the late rounds, you know, raised some red flags. And the last I heard, you know, it was a small brain bleed, and they were, you know, they did the surgery to reduce the swelling. They removed part of his skull. Then you know, he was in an induced coma, stable condition. Then you hear that he had a fever of 104, and that caused a stroke. And now he was on life support, and basically being kept alive by a machine. And basically, when you hear life support, all you think of is, oh, my God, that's a situation where he's got to determine when to pull the plug. And you hope that's not the case. Now, the last I heard was stable again. I am going to go and see if there are any updates now. But, you know, just letting you know, I mean, all of us in the Boombox, and we're all in a fraternity together. And, you know, all of our thoughts and prayers go out to Magomed and his family. I know they've listed online some ways to help the family cope with the medical bills. And, you know, you just first and foremost pray for his recovery. You know, he's a family man. He's got three young daughters. And, you know, basically he's just fighting as a way to provide for his family. And, you know, just pray that, you know, he gets better. And, you know, obviously if his fight career is over, that's the least important thing. The most important thing is, you know, he has a healthy, productive life for himself and his family. Hello?
Tony?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So, Tom, we were on. Is Rich still on?
I'm not hearing him. I just caught when he flipped the ball over to you, and then finally I got unmuted, and I don't know what happened to him. I've heard you loud and clear. You're coming in great tonight.
Okay. Well, then what I'll do is I'll basically start talking until we until we know that we're all good to go. I mean, I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. Hopefully we're not having more technical problems. But, yeah, I caught what you were saying. And, you know, something I always think of in this case is, you know, our main concern is with the injured fighter. But you also have to think of the guy that's on the other end of it. You got to wonder what's going through his head now.
Yep.
Yeah, Tony?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm here. Haven't heard anything from Rich, but we'll keep like I was saying just before we got cut off there, you know, that when some tragedy like this happens, you know, our thoughts, prayers, concerns, everything, most of it has to go to the injured fighter with good reason. But I often think of the guy that was on the other end of that. You know, you got to wonder where he's at psychologically. I mean, what a horrible feeling that has to be.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, I know some fighters that have never been the same from it.
Sure.
Boom Boom Mancini is a perfect example. Now, I've been reading Boom Boom's book, and obviously, I'm always a funny guy. When I get to a book, when I buy a book, especially like a biography, especially like a sports biography, I generally jump right to the meat of the book. You know, I'll catch up with he was born, and he started boxing this way, and started training like this. I'll get to that later. I want to get to the meat of the book. So I got to the Dooku Kim book, or the Ray Mancini book, and jumped right into the Dooku Kim chapter, talking about that fight. And then I was reading about, you know, Mancini's subsequent fights with Livingstone Bramble. And they were saying Ray really had such a problem that, and I think they were saying it was with bad hemorrhoids, of all things, that he was bleeding so much that it actually, he was low on blood. And this is a guy that bled a lot during his fight. I remember they were saying, like even the doctor said at one point, and you're an Ohio guy, so I mean, obviously you know probably more about Boom Boom than even I do. And
sure.
Even the doctor said at one point, like, yeah, the good news is you're half alive, the bad news is you're half dead. And yeah, seeing that fight with Bramble, especially the first fight, he really had nothing. I mean, he had absolutely nothing in the tank, nothing on his punches. The real Boom Boom Mancini would have absolutely annihilated Livingstone Bramble. But I think the combination of his physical problems as well as his psychological problems Because I remember even early in that fight, he was throwing a lot of punches, but you could just tell there wasn't that same killer instinct. Mm-hmm. Now, with Dooku Kim reading that book, they said it was basically the last right hand that did it. They said because with the amount of blood that was on his brain, they said no human being could have fought the way Dooku Kim did in that 13th round with that injury. They said it was one punch. It was that straight right in the 14th round and like the opening couple seconds that put him down and subsequently out that caused that brain bleed that ended his life. And, you know, Boom Boom was never the same. Another perfect example was Gabriel Ruelas. Back in 1995, he was fighting a fighter by the name of Jimmy Garcia. And
right.
I didn't think Garcia really should have been sanctioned for that fight. And the reason is Garcia had lost his last fight. And it was a title fight, and I forget to whom. But he lost every round, convincingly. Went the distance, but he lost his decision, like 120 to 108. In his next fight, he had the title fight with Gabriel Ruelas. And I'm like, why did they even sign in this fight? And Ruelas pummeled him unmercifully. And they said after every round in the corner, Garcia's family working in his corner, his father was slapping him, saying, fight harder, fight harder. Finally, they stopped the fight. He lapsed into a coma and died a couple days later.
Yeah.
And Ruelas said in his next fight, when he lost his title back to Azuma Nelson, that he, like, right before the knockout, he said that he was fighting so tentative that he was almost like afraid to do anything. And right before Nelson broke through and stopped him, he saw Garcia in the ring. Like,
yeah, I remember that. And
he said he basically fell to pieces.
Yeah, when it gets to that stage, you know that you should not be in there. Period. End of story.
Absolutely. And, you know, I like everything that I was saying, and hopefully it did record, so it'll be on the air. So, we had obviously play for a fighter, play for his recovery. Obviously, his fighting career is going to be over, and that's fine, as long as he's healthy and able to, be with his family and provide for his three young daughters. And, that's basically all you can really do. I know several websites have come out, where they're, taking donations or anything to help the fighter with his medical bills. You can, find that just by looking it up on Google. And it's been on several boxing websites on how to do it with the PayPal donations and all that.
It's on our blog.
It's crazy,
Yeah.
But Tom, before I forget, you want to hear a really awesome story?
Sure.
I think you'll like this. So I'm at work yesterday. Like I said, I've been at this job for about almost 4 months now and having a good time. And a lot of the women there, like some middle-aged, African-American women, a lot of them were big boxing fans. The one woman that was supervising the department I started in, her son's an amateur boxer, and I talk to him sometimes. And another woman there, I'll say she's, in her late 50s, early 60s, she's a big boxing fan. So, of course, now that I'm there, these people are all like kids in candy shops. They got somebody that, really talk to them and really get into it.
Yeah.
So, one woman, and I forget how, my new supervisor, his birthday's coming up in about a month, and they're like, hey, the week of his birthday, we're thinking about maybe offering something for breakfast, and then maybe doing a happy hour. And I said, well, I apologize, I can't make it, I'm going to be away that week. Oh, you're going to be away. Oh, where are you going? And I said, I go up the mountains for a few days. And I said, I'm home Wednesday afternoon, and I'm going to try to make it down to Northeast Philly to see Roy Jones fight. You can't believe he's fighting in Northeast Philly. And she goes, I can't believe he's fighting in general. I think you should hang it up. By the way, you're a boxing guy? Do you know who my father-in-law was? Well, I'm not thinking about it. Well, I met this woman. I'll say she's in her, mid-50s now. Her father-in-law was the late, great Yank Durham.
Wow. What a small world,
Yeah. I'm sitting there, I'm like, you got to be shitting me. I'm like, how cool is that? And plus, obviously being a Philly guy, I always was a big Joe Frazier fan, even though he pretty much retired before I was born. Doesn't matter. The reason I throw a left hook was because of Joe Frazier. Now, I was about 13 before I started boxing, but I was really getting interested in the sport. And my dad bought me a VHS tape called Heavyweights the Big Punchers. And Joe Frazier was the very first one on there. And I remember them talking about the Philadelphia left hook. And I was really getting pride in Philadelphia now. At that time, you know, I was really getting into the Eagles. And I was, you know, I was a big Flyers fan, a big Phillies fan. And I used to go to Sixers games. And I, Philadelphia, everything Philadelphia. Well, Philadelphia left hook. And I used to stand in front of that bag for hours.
Yeah.
And just play left hook.
Yeah,
my right hand ended up sucking so bad. But yeah, that's how I developed the left foot. Just Frazier.
Yeah, and it had to be cool though with that Philadelphia connection. Just get it when you got into boxing, just realizing just the rich history of that city, and just so many great champs. And I mean, I'm talking across the country, the whole reputation of those gym wars. I don't think there's another city like it that has that. That has, you know, I don't know if it's still like that now, but I know I'm talking like 70s and 80s and the 60s. It always had that reputation.
I've been involved in some of them wars. Believe me, I've been involved in some of them. I had gym wars that were tougher than some of my fights.
Yeah.
And one of the coolest things I can remember back in 1996, I was actually coming off knee surgery, and I wasn't even 100%. It was actually my first bout back after knee surgery. And we were down in the Naval Academy. And I was fighting a kid from Navy, big, strong, husky kid. And he didn't have a lot of experience. And it was a good kind of like a tune-up to see how my knee was holding up. And if I was 100%, I probably would have taken him out. But I couldn't push off my back leg. It just wasn't strong enough. But I beat this kid up pretty good. And he bloated his nose up and all that. And later on, my dad came up to me and goes, I went up to the kid after the fight, you know, just, you know, hey, pat him on the back, tell him, you know, he came out there, he showed a lot of heart. And he goes, kid said to him, I don't even remember where it was from. You know, he goes, I always heard about Philadelphia fighters and how tough and how good Philadelphia fighters are. And tonight I found out firsthand what a Philadelphia fighter is.
Yeah.
Can you guys hear me now?
All right, we're back.
Hey, speaking of Philadelphia fighters, how about this? Eddie Alvarez from Philly is the new Bellator champ there.
You know what? It was funny because, you know, I mean, I don't watch the MMA as much, but a week or so ago, like it was last Sunday, we took my dog to the one park. And we were walking on it, and my dad always talked to this one guy originally from northeast Philadelphia. And he's up in this area now, Harleysville area. And he walks his dog, and his dog plays with my dog. And he kept saying, hey, you know this kid Alvarez just won the title? You know, he's from Philly and whatever. And the only Alvarez I can think of is Canelo Alvarez, who just got his ass handed to him by Mayweather. I'm like, I don't know Alvarez. I'm like, you think Canelo Alvarez fought Mayweather? No. Kid from Philly just won the title. So I'm like, what are you talking about? I said, you're not talking about Gabe Rosado because he fought for the title, but he lost. No, Alvarez.
Yeah.
I don't know his first name because he's Alvarez. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. You know, and we went on like he was on first, once on second for about 5 minutes.
That's awesome. Well, it was Eddie Alvarez, and it was quite the controversy. I thought that Chandler won the fight, but I really didn't score it, so I couldn't argue with it. And it wasn't a very close fight. It was epic, all five rounds.
I really think it was one of those things that a couple of those rounds were so close that there's no complaints about the decision. I mean, you could go 3-2 either way. I think it was that close.
Right. And, of course, Dana White... thought it was hilarious because there's a certain contractual situation involved with Eddie's contract with Bellator that allows him different options upon a win or a loss in this fight. So it's kind of a situation where Dana White thinks that Eddie's going to be back with him sooner than later. But Bjorn Remdy went right back at him. Give him credit. There was some real controversy with a video clip that was obviously turned into a GIF file of Bjorn Remdy shaking his head. Have you heard this, Tom?
No, I haven't heard about this one yet.
In the background of the video, as the belt was, or as the decision was being read for Alvarez, he was supposedly shaking his head. And he said later himself that that wasn't anything to do with not wanting Alvarez to have the belt. It was because people were booing. And he was shaking his head at the booing. So a little bit of a controversy there.
Mm-hmm.
Related to the video. And Dana White, of course, made some bones about it and said some shit. And said something about it being karma. And so Bjorn Remdy came back and said, well, you know, if that's karma, then I'll have another plate or something. What's more karma?
Hey, guys, if I can just jump in real quick, I just got sent an article, and they're talking about the Abu Samad, and they said that, I don't know if it's his manager or, but promoter Lou DiBella has also come out and said that they're establishing a fund, and they said his condition has improved since the weekend when he was stricken with 104-degree fever following surgery. That was led to him suffering a stroke. His condition has since calmed down, the swelling of his face subsided, and he remains in stable condition. So, I mean, that's, you know, much better than obviously critical condition. I mean, he fought out of the woods, but at least, you know, there was some improvement.
That's good news. That whole fun thing is on my blog, too, on FightThisUnlimited.com.
Yeah, I do. I've seen it on a few places.
So you can check it out there for sure. I don't know. My take on that fight is just, you know, when your fighter starts talking about, is my head swollen and my hand's broken? He had a bunch of different injuries that he was complaining about. And at some point, I mean, this is like somebody from boxing needs to come out like Chael Sonnen. Attacked this guy's corner for not calling it. I've seen articles referencing the referee should have stopped it. Well, if the referee doesn't stop, it's in your corner, it falls next. And, you know, this was a lot of things happening to this guy. Fighting another big guy, getting hit in the face a lot with all those facial injuries. I think they should have had a clue and stopped this before it got to this point. So hopefully they do the right thing and take care of him. He only got $40,000 for the fight itself. That was his purse, so I'm sure he's going to have unbelievable kind of bills to pay for this hospital situation. But it's pretty crazy, especially after we just lost a boxer, Frankie Beal. So...
The other thing I was going to bring up from that fight card was the main event, the Genevieve Golovkin and Curtis Chauvin Stevens fight. Now, before I say my next statement, I want to preface it by saying, in no way am I comparing them, or in no way am I saying Golovkin is going to turn in the fighter that I mentioned. When you think of Genevieve Golovkin, what is the first thing you think about?
Julio Cesar Chavez, Sr.
Okay. Tom, when you think about Golovkin, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Okay, I didn't hear you. I think about who?
When we talk about Golovkin, Genevieve Golovkin.
Golovkin. Okay, yeah. What's the first thing I think of him? Kind of like a mini Mike Tyson, like a destroyer, exciting, just coming at you, wild, just guy I want to watch. That's without thinking about anything. That pops into my mind.
Okay, and that's right. That's what most people are going to think about. And I was saying, you know what, it was the other night, now, totally different styles because of their body types, but you know what kept popping into my mind the other night? You're going to laugh when you hear this. Thomas Hearns, a young Thomas Hearns. And the reason I say
okay.
that is when everybody thinks of Thomas Hearns, what do they think of? That lethal right hand, that destructive knockout power, and a lot of people always overlook the fact on what a good, well, not even good, what an exceptional boxer Thomas Hearns was. Especially, he was a 6'2" welterweight, but he knew how to use his height, he knew how to use his leverage, he had a fantastic jab. Thomas Hearns was a great boxer. Kennedy Golovkin the other night, more than his tremendous power, really impressed me with his jab, his boxing ability, and his ring generalship. What he did out there was he was landing a hard, thumping jab that controlled that pace early. And he remember, he's fighting a top-quality fighter here at Curtis Stevens.
Right.
And he didn't even get a shootout with him. So what did he do? He used a jab. He boxed him. And then he was able to set up his power shots. And then at the same time, he got him against the ropes. Technical mastery. He'd land to the head. He'd go right to the body. And that's what caused the stoppage.
You know, that's a good point, Tony, you bring up about Tommy Hearns. Because early on in his career, like, you know, his amateur days and his first couple pro fights before he got any widespread exposure, he was known for his boxing skills before all the hitman, before the power really came into it. And I think it was probably 78 when he started to get a little more publicity. In 79, he was really a comer. And that's when he had that excitement behind him about this guy that's just going to come in, and he's just tall, he's lanky, he's knocking out everyone, he's knocking the bag off the wall in the gym. And it wasn't until the Leonard fight where their roles switched, and you remember that from the sixth round on,
yep.
The sixth or seventh, when after Leonard's great body attack on him, and all of a sudden Tommy said, well, let's show the other side. And then for the next couple of years, he stayed with that mode. Then he went back to the hitman for the Duran fight. But that's a very good point about him. And I didn't see Golovkin's latest fight, but yeah, this whole—that's a good point. Very good point.
Yeah, when I was back there watching it, and I was saying, this guy is actually a very accomplished boxer. Now, I don't remember if I said it in my preview last week. But I picked an eighth-round stoppage. I said he's going to, you know, use his power is going to break him down. I don't remember if I said it on the show. That's why I cut out that comment I made on that one boxing Facebook page. Just to send to you guys to show that I still got it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, that's what we expect, bud. You've raised the bar pretty high, okay? That's what we expect.
Yeah.
Nothing less. Right, Rich? We expect nothing less.
That preview, by the way, was quite a thriller. Lots of fun. That Gennady Golovkin fight was pretty interesting. I noticed during that fight that he fights more than any other boxer with his head always, you know, kind of almost in front of his hands sometimes. And not too many people get away with that. And he's always moving forward, it seems, when he's on the attack. And just didn't seem to take any punch in a bad way. Very confident. But at the same time, he threw unbelievable body shots from range. That's what made me think of Leo Cesar Chavez. Because he could throw those hooks and get on the outside. And just stay in the side. How hard you try to block it, get there somehow. And Golovkin has that, and he has the inside punching, like John said, Mike Tyson. Left hook like Mike Tyson. So he's got a lot of good qualities, a lot of good boxes, but he's in such a small package, you don't expect it. So I really like his style.
He seems to have that it factor, that excitement factor that. You know, with a lot of guys, regardless of their skill level, if they're on, a lot of casual fans will watch them, but they're not really going out of their way and getting that real adrenaline rush and the anticipation of it. But this guy seems to have that.
I was kind of funny that that fight was in Madison Square Garden because the ring was all kinds of Russian written all over the ring. There, so it was Kennedy Golovkin's own promotional company. I can't believe the guy is busy fight. He's got his own freaking company. So he's doing something right. But I think he should come out with shirts that say "Who's your Gennady?"
And, you know, I was reading that one of his nutritional secrets is drinking horse milk. Apparently,
thinks
that, yeah, that's the stuff for him. He really swears by that. And, you know, I just have this image of he grew up on some farm on the side of a mountain out in the middle of nowhere, running through the snow and going out. Now, I never heard of anyone milking the horses, but apparently I Googled that, and horse milk is it's much more of a European thing. I'm not even sure where we'd go about getting it, and if we'd have to have it imported from Europe, the cost would probably be prohibitive, and then the way it works for me, I probably wouldn't like the taste of it, but I'd be willing to try it. If it works for him, I'd give it a try.
I think we have plenty of milk in Nevada. Right?
Well, that's a different kind. That's a different kind. Yeah. I mean, not that I know from experience, but we'll let that, where are we going here, you know.
Well, we've heard of worse things. I mean, Juan Manuel Marquez and drinking his own urine comes to mind, so. Outrageous. But I wonder what's in it that him thinks he doesn't make him think he's in it. Or that's what he likes to drink. Have to find it at the grocery store, I think.
Yeah.
Someone asked for that. Can you tell me where the horse milk is? We got some other good fights on the Bellator card there. Of course, Mola Wall had a little rematch with Emmanuel Newton. And the mummy style ruled the night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one. It seemed like Mo had the biggest buildup in Bellator, and you remember when they first brought him in, it was just he was the king, and he kind of even shunned the UFC. Who needs it? I'll be a bigger star. And everything seemed set up for him, but I don't know what the problem was with him. I mean, he had said going into the fight that there was nothing wrong. He was set and ready to get revenge. And, well, you heard all the talk he said if you caught the card. I mean, it was good for trash talk, and Newton, to his credit, just shoved it, you know, just fluffed it off and went in and took him apart for five rounds.
That fight sort of reminded me of the Gilbert dude from The Ultimate Fighter going up against Luke Barnett.
Mm-hmm.
Kid from Britain. In that episode, he just tried to wrestle, and nothing worked. Couldn't keep the guy down for more than 10 seconds at a time. And I think Mo did that at first, and then realized, well, what else am I going to do? I'm going to have to try to strike with him. And he's just trying to box, for the most part. And the other guy's throwing kicks, elbows, knees, name it. Newton's throwing it, and he's throwing a lot of spinning kicks, but one of them is solid. On the body there, and Mo just seemed like he was getting hit from every angle. Because every time he tried to get in close to his own range, he got whacked, even if it was just a backhand.
Well, I'll say this much. This definitely put a stop to all the talk about a lucky punch the first time around and what a fluke it was that Newton won the first time. I don't think, and I haven't heard any interviews from Mo afterwards, but I just don't know what he could say, because this was, you know, the first time he could come up with that, well, yeah, I got caught early, it was a freak accident, it won't happen again, but when you lose for five rounds, there's not much you can say. So this, I think, a terrible setback for Lawler. Not saying he can't come back, but this is a horrible, horrible setback.
For the Wall, yeah. He probably should stick to wrestling, actually. I mean, his maker is going. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like he's got the drive for him. And somebody actually mentioned on a story about this in the comment section. Well, now he can go return his crown to Walmart.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's good.
got to live up to it. So I guess he's kind of earned that kind of criticism. But even Roy Nelson was upset with him. And it was kind of funny how you noticed they didn't even mention that Roy Nelson was in his corner. Obviously, you know, if you're an Edmonds fan, when you see that, that's Roy Nelson. But Bellator wasn't even mentioning his name at any point during the whole broadcast, like, purposely. So I thought that was kind of funny. But Roy Nelson was disgusted by him. He just didn't seem like he was trying. And, you know, I think they told him in the last round, you got to go out there and take this guy out. And it didn't seem like he was at all any more aggressive. Mo just seemed to be going through the motions, basically. It seemed like it would be easier than it was.
I mean, that just begs the question, was he just out of it? Was it a bad night, or was did he just feel so outskilled that any big expenditure of energy is just going to be a waste of time, so I just don't want to get knocked out? I can't answer that question. I don't know. Maybe it'll come out someday.
But he thought he won. I mean, his reaction when the score was that, it's like, what? Are you kidding me? There's no way. So you have to be pretty cocky to think that, you know, even after you just get your ass kicked, you won the fight. I don't know. Some of those punches given, you know, and even those kicks, they're not very hard, you know. They're just point scorers. They just landed, so they scored your points. But, you know, they have to hurt. Taking
sure.
a succession of over the course of five rounds, I mean, come on. So, I don't know what he was bitching about, but he definitely lost that fight. There's no way to give him that. No way to score his call. And then there was one other title fight where the title changed hands. And I'll tell you, I'm not psychic, but when I watched that first title fight, I'm drawing a blank on who it was. But I said to myself, wouldn't this be awesome if this is the theme of the night, you know? And,
you mean with Daniel Strauss and Pat Kern?
That. Mm-hmm. And Strauss, I mean, what a complete fighter. Just never gave up. Just always working for something in that fight. And even after he took the low blow there, or the shot to the head, the legal knee to the head, kept going. Was solid all around.
Yeah, I think Strauss did a great job of just imposing his will, imposing his style. I've seen him fight here in Akron back in 2009, and he fought a guy from my old gym and looked very impressive that night. And I knew at that point this guy's got something going because he just seems to have insane cardio. I mean, I thought Curran would have maybe an edge in that department, and I was wrong. I mean, Strauss didn't slow down. He kept the pressure on, and he did pretty much what he wanted to do. So, changing of the guard. But now they'll have a third one because now they're one up, so they'll do it again. So, we'll see if Kern can make some adjustments. He's sure going to need to.
Well, apparently they're also going to have the third Alvarez and Chandler fight.
Yes. There'll be great demand for that one.
And I thought it was a great fight.
Sure.
I couldn't believe how Chandler's eye was swelling up like that. I think they're both hitting each other with some good shots, but Chandler just got the worst of it in the worst location.
And that may have had a big influence on the judging. Who knows?
Yeah, it was so back and forth. I mean, it was almost like whoever's going to get the last takedown here might win the fight. You never know. And I thought it was actually judged very well. It could have gone either way, I thought, but judges had it right. I don't really watch fights like that over and over again. I probably should before I talk about them so much. But there was that one point where Alvarez almost had the rear naked choke, which is what killed him in the last fight. So he almost got it on Chandler, and that was the closest it ever came to him. So I guess in that category, I think Alvarez deserved to win. He came closest to shutting it out. Shut them down. So, but man, they fought like there's going to be no tomorrow. I really enjoyed watching them. Glad it was on 3TV.
Yep.
I didn't have to watch it on my computer. Epcot, and they got 1.1 million viewers.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest audience that Bellator had. Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, I guess we have to be glad in one sense that that main event was called off. I mean, I don't want to say anyone hurt, but it worked better for all of us. We got a free fight, and it came out great.
I got another boxing story here. We have a situation with the boxing writer, sports writer, actually. Smith is a judge, too. Wrote some military books after retiring from the Currents, which was brought in 1995. And wrote about a lot of other sports, too. But now he's 73 years old, and he has a treacherous disease called Lewy Body Dementia. I'm sure you've probably read something from George Smith's over the years, Tony. He's been writing about boxing for a while. Graduated from UConn in 1963 and got a second lieutenant's commission from ROTC. And only 2 years he became captain. He served as an information officer in Vietnam. And he really likes history. Writing, so he got into the newspaper business. He joined the Current in 1971. Wrote a book. First of his four published books, The Siege at Hue, based on his Vietnam experiences. He also did a couple books on World War II, Carlson's Raid, The Do or Die Men, and MacArthur's Escape. And also has a fifth book, just waiting for a publisher. But I really enjoyed the fights, and he's actually going to be receiving a contribution to boxing honor from the Connecticut Boxing Hall of Fame on November 9th. But it's a pretty interesting story behind this guy. Now he's in the hospital dealing with this. Lots of prayers go to him as well as Magomed Salamov, the struggle there. His house. And, of course, we have UFC to talk about. A little bit of fights last night. Did not watch them. I was at karate class, and then I totally forgot by the time I got the UFC fights on. But Tim Kennedy beat Rafael Nadal in the main event there at the fight night. That was a pretty interesting fight. I read somewhere that Tim Kennedy was going into this one with an injury. He knocked out one.
Apparently he had a, a torn quad. I mean, I don't see how he could have even fought with that, but it was a pretty serious leg injury. And, that's the first knockout he'd had in quite a while. And he left no doubt to it. You know, he's normally a ground-and-pound-and submission guy. But he did the job with this good left hook.
Pretty amazing. He pulled the Karate Kid, actually. Mr. Miyagi,
yeah.
And came out there and got the win. So they're talking about big things for him, of course, you know, big matchups. The co-main event was actually a female fight. Alexis Davis beat Liz Carmouche by unanimous decision.
Yeah, that was one that I almost lost my vocal cords screaming at Liz. Not, I mean, I really didn't care who won, but just to see Liz making that mistake of not even trying to check those kicks. I mean, she was just eating them. And I'm just wondering, you know, raise your leg, Liz. Oh, so, then finally she started to try to do something about it, but by that time it was a little too late, and everyone was talking about Alexis' submission skills, but she put on quite a clinic with those leg kicks, and that pretty much won the fight for her. So I think that with her and Jessica may have a date down the road, and I think the winner will be in a good position, so see how that goes.
And we had a Yoel Romero Palacio beat Roddy Marks by punches. Yeah, quite the battle between Rustam Khabibov and not Vidal. That went to a unanimous decision for Bilal. And that got fight night.
Yeah, that was surprising because Rustam, as most people know, was known for his submissions. And he really didn't try too hard to get it to the ground. At times they'd clinch, but his stand-up was wild. I mean, throwing spin techniques and wild kicks. And I had it 29-28, but two of the judges had it 30-27. I mean, they got the right guy. But, that was a wild affair, wild affair. So it shows that Rustan's a little more versatile than anyone had figured.
And we had a former Ultimate Fighter winner, Michael Chiesa, win by rear naked choke after, from what I read on this one, escaping his own choke in the first round, the Colton Smith.
Yeah, that was a give and take, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. One guy's in trouble, then he whirls around, gets, initially, Smith was in a lot of trouble in the first round. I mean, I started that Joe Rogan, he's got it, which is, you know, not necessarily bright move, and he got out of it, and he just about had Chiesa out of it, but Michael hung on, came back, and did the job that he had to in the second round.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting matchup between Ultimate Fighter winners there, and Chiesa got the best of Smith, so.
Yeah, now, from what I understand, Smith is still on active duty, I believe, because they introduced him as fighting out of Fort Hood, Texas. And I don't know, when I was in the Army, they didn't let you just do your own thing for 8 hours every day. I mean, I'm assuming he has to have some kind of official Army duty. And I just don't know what kind of training he's getting. But, I mean, my observation on this is if he really wants to compete at this level, he probably needs to get out of the Army and get in with the, you know, a real good gym, because I don't know what kind of training he's getting there. I mean, that's just a question I have. So, my observation.
Well, let's call the Army and find out.
Yeah.
So, we also had that Bobby Green beat James Krause by TKO in the first round from a kick to the body. Francisco Rivera beat George Roop by TKO in the second round. We had Dennis Bermudez, another win there for him against Steven Seiler. Unanimous decision there for Bermudez. And another female fight, Amanda Nunes beat Jermaine Virandami by TKO in the very first round. And Lorenz Larkin beat Chris Camozzi by unanimous decision. Yancy Medeiros Eve Edwards by first-round knockout. Seth Baczynski beat Neil Magny by unanimous decision. Finally, Derek Brunson beat Brian Houston by rear naked choke.
You know, Edwards looked pretty good for a while, but he just got nailed again, and I don't know. I mean, the guy's a legend. You hate to see him go out like that. And I'm not saying he's done, but yeah, it sure didn't end too good for him.
Well, that's kind of his problem. I've seen him live in Worcester once and got knocked out just like that. So it happens to him a lot. And sometimes it's just a matter of having too many fights.
Yeah. And the problem now, I mean, he's certainly not getting any younger. And you know how that goes, that we know from experience that the more you get knocked out, I think each time you get knocked out you may be a little more susceptible to it. And right now I don't know what he's going to do. Maybe time for him to quit.
It's possible. Anyway, we got what do we got for boxing coming up this weekend there, Tony?
So we got a big triple header on HBO. I'm not in front of my computer, so if somebody can bring a box rack, I can go over all the fights with you. But the one that we're most looking forward to is the battle of the former Olympians. One of them who we presented to a few weeks ago, Julio Andrade, Demetrius Andrade, against James Matarossian. That should be the one that, you know, has everybody really looking forward to.
And, of course, we're all rooting for Andre.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked him when we interviewed him a few weeks ago. He's got a hell of a lot of talent. He's pushing a good, tough fighter. But as he said a few weeks ago, Wings came out 4 years before he did, and he's on the fast track. Andrade said he's on the fast track. Wayne doesn't put anybody the caliber he's fought, and he hasn't put anybody the caliber of Demetrius.
Yeah, it should be definitely a pretty decent fight there. I like the matchup. Someone's always got to go, right?
Yeah, somebody's always got to go. If you got Boxer, can you read the records off real quick? I'll have it in front of me.
Oh, maybe I can. Let's see. Boxer load faster. I'd have it right now. Let's see. Schedule.
And then we can talk about two other folks in the car, too.
Have other fights on that card?
Yeah, it's a triple header on HBO.
I should have it somewhere in my blog. Wait for Boxer. And for those of you just tuning in, I want to let all our listeners know we're going to be having Brandon Shelton on at around 9:15 Eastern here. So, those of you waiting to hear him, hang on about 10 minutes or so, less than 10 minutes, 8 minutes now. And we're going to have Brandon on. He's got 20 wins, 7 losses, at least according to Sure Dog. And he's a big-time MMA fighter. Tough guy. So we'll have to talk to him about a little bit more than we did last week, because we only got one question in last week, literally. And, we just couldn't stay.
It happened last week when I pre-recorded my show.
What?
Well, I pre-recorded my segment last week, so what happened on your live feed?
Oh. We had, we were supposed to have two guests. We were supposed to have Brandon and Bill Smallwood. And we ended up having Bill connected, but we couldn't get Brandon for long enough to get more than one question. So we played your session early. Like at 8:30, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got those guys on at 9:15, and then it turned into just Bill for the rest of the show.
How was my segment? Was I good?
It was thrilling.
You liked that, didn't you?
No, it was pretty good. Definitely could hear you better than ever, number one. And you got everything.
And I was singing, too. That was the best part about it, in my mind.
And my only objection was your slur against Big Papi.
I know you said you were going to give him my address and all that.
So I'm driving down there in this new Silverado. Kick your ass, right?
I wanted my poor Shane to get it,
Now, Shane did good, but he didn't play enough. Big Papi was in every game, and he did something big in every game. And I mean, I don't think they talked about whatever record he must have broke, but he had like a 800-something batting average in the playoffs. Like, who does that? So,
no shit.
He deserved it big time.
Yeah, I was, my usual sarcastic self.
Right. Vic Torino, though, is definitely going to be with us for the long haul now. He likes his team, and they like him. I don't know why.
Yeah, I saw in the videos where they were showing fans up at Fenway singing, with Bob, singing a Bob Marley song, No Worries, is when our team's being introduced.
Right.
I'm glad they've really taken to him. I mean, we really took him to the Philly. That we were in a rebuilding mode. It was time for him to move on. We really got nothing in the deal for him. And then, he goes on with LAL, this month there. But, he signed a deal with Boston. And when he first signed it, for like $13 million a year. I said, you know, I like Shane, but I don't know if he's worth that much. Well, you know what? Maybe he is, because he was an instrumental part of getting that trophy back in Boston. I'm a boxing ring man. I'm sure as hell I'm a baseball ring man.
I'm actually facing Team Rain Man this week in fantasy football player. But it's R-A-I-N, Rain Man, just regular Rain Man, not the boxing Rain Man. That was funny, too, because that was my matchup in week one, first week of fantasy football this year. Team Rain Man, just a coincidence. Anyway, I'm waiting for Box Rec. It'll be up in a minute. We'll get our results. This fight is on Saturday, right?
Yeah, Saturday night.
Saturday nights are ripe for fighting, so they say. Come on, Box Rec. Why are you so slow? While we're waiting, I thought we ought to do like a little bit of a TNT thing tonight with this head injury deal. The NFL is still dealing with it. They had the big lawsuit for $700 million to more players. Now this year there's a situation with a lot of players going low in the NFL rather than hit high, and now you get knee injuries. So it's like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't in the NFL. What do you do about combat sports where you pretty much, there's no way you can get shots in the head? Especially boxing, because you already have gloves that are usually fairly padded well. What do you do? Well, how do you fix it? How do you prevent it from happening?
Aside from wrapping you guys in bubble wrap, I don't know. Honestly, that's one I can't answer anymore. Because, I mean, I see the safety precautions they made. And I can even tell you, just from the 20 years that I've been involved in the sport, and you're getting, you know, Ring Fight catalog, title boxing catalog, Everlast and all that, just to see the improvements they've made on the safety equipment. Even with mouthpieces that are designed to help curb concussions. With headgear that, you know, is maybe lighter weight, but better padding. What people forget is, especially in boxing, when you wear headgear, you say, oh, how can you get professional wearing headgear? Remember, though, the concussion comes from your brain slamming against the inside of the skull. So when you get your head snapped back, that's where your brain is hitting the skull. Because if you're wearing, say, a 4-ounce headgear, or a 6-ounce headgear, or an 8-ounce headgear, the bigger headgear you wear, that's more weight that is attached to your neck that is moving back or moving forward when you get your head snapped, that is putting more violence into that brain swelling into the inside of the skull. But the improvements I see made, and the first thing that's even over the years, you know, there always needs to be more caution. There's caution testing. The cool makes it harder in boxing and MMA for that matter than any other sport out there. I'm watching a hockey game right now. Now, say the Flyers right now are playing the New Jersey Devils. And if this one guy from the Flyers gets hit, and he goes down and he's losing, there's a recruiter came back in the locker room, and he's not allowed back out until he completes, you know, a concussion test. So obviously you didn't have that even 5 years ago. Even 3 years ago, you really didn't have that. Same thing in football. Oh, so-and-so got sacked, and he seemed a little groggy getting up. Well, we're going to take him to the back, and he has to camp a battery of tests. It shows he doesn't have a concussion before he's allowed to play. You have two guys that are boxing, and boxer A knocks down boxer B, but when Boxer B gets up, they don't give him a concussion test. They tell the B, and they say, are you okay? Can you continue? Do you really continue? Sometimes, where are you at? That's really about all. So that thing is going to get knocked out 30 seconds into that round. So this is But he's not hurt. He's trying to look straight ahead. He's trying to answer those questions. And then he's going to go back in, and he's going to, once again, get concussed with another blow. Or possible. I'm not going to say that, but he's running the risk of getting another concussed blow to the head. Well, and then, when you get sparring situations, then you get into, now, I know they're making football improvements in practicing, and you can't let you go in at contact one day a week. Well, you don't have that in Boston. In Boston, generally, most of your training is sparring. And some guys, I'll give you a perfect example, late in his career with a guy like James Haney. James Haney was a guy that wasn't much into training and conditioning. James is a guy that never did road work anymore. James is a guy that wasn't much, you know, into jumping rope. James is a guy that basically used to go in the gym, lace up the gloves, and they would just box for 10, 12 rounds. And that was his way of getting in shape for the fight. And I know guys in the gym that would like that. We would see guys who would come in, just spar. That's all they would do. They would come in, lace up the gloves, get in the ring, spar. 6, 7, 8 rounds, maybe more, maybe less. And he didn't lay to the head, even with the big gloves, even with the headgear. They're getting blows in the head. I mean, there are times in the gym that I have to wasn't knocked down and never even had a break in the action, but I don't remember the third round. It was a good shot. You know, punch for a second, got punchy. But I had a concussion, absolutely. I remember one time I was 18 years old. We were down the gym, me and Sonny Adrian, a good friend of mine. We went hard that night, you know. We sparred hard. And I really don't remember much of the third round. And I remember going over my 1-3 test that night and just laying on the floor because I had a headache. Did I have a concussion? Very well could have. But at the same time, say I had a fight that Saturday, guess what? I'm fighting on Saturday. Because nobody knows what happened in that gym.
That's the price of mysteries. Now you have to wonder how many people are reading these stories and asking, is it worth it, you know? Should I go into that sport because of the inherently? So that's my thing. But, Tom, what do you think on this?
Well, it still gets back to assumption of risk. Because if regardless if it's boxing or MMA, there's only so much you can do before you change the whole nature of the sport. I mean, really, it's you know, we have. I think that in boxing, they stop fights a little quicker than they did back in the, you know, even in my time, even 60s, 70s, and 80s. I think they were a little slower jumping in. I can think of a few pretty outrageous examples that wouldn't happen today, but still. There's only so much you can do. Like in most of these fights where someone's really seriously injured, it's not a one-punch knockout in the first round. It's where the fight goes on round after round after round after round, and yet the loser is doing enough that he's being competitive. He's still hanging in there, and the referee would be wrong to stop it because you could, like in the Frankie Leo fight, you remember that one? What was that, 3 weeks ago, a month ago? I mean, he was competitive. Yeah, and it would have been wrong for the referee to stop it, and his corner knew that the guy was still hanging in there and still being competitive. So I just don't know what could be done. I mean, what else could someone do unless we're just going to say, well, we're just going to outlaw all punches to the head? Well, then stop the sport. Just shut it down. So. That's my 2 cents worth on that. I mean, I just think it's still, like we're hearing this in the NFL a lot now, what can be done about it. But regardless, when you've got guys in any of these combat sports, be it football, MMA, or boxing, when you've got guys this quick, this strong, this freakishly athletic, and so talented, with that much explosive power, someone's going to get hurt. I don't know if there's any way around it.
Yeah, it's a tough call. You know, I don't think you'll ever see pro fights go back to headgear or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I just said on that, it was headgear, that's great and everything. But at the same time, I mean, headgear's biggest advantage is protecting your face, so you don't get the same facial damage that you would get. You know, it protects. I mean, you still get broken noses in headgear. I would know that better than anybody. But it helps because you figure with the padding on your cheekbone, your nose isn't as pronounced. At the same time, you have the padding in your cheekbones, so it helps reduce the swelling around your orbital sockets. And also with the forehead pad, it helps prevent cuts over your eyes. So that's the headgear's biggest advantage, is the preventing or the lessening of the potential facial damage. But with really brain injuries, no, not at all.
Well, now I know why you wanted me to sign this fight card, because, well, we got quite the lineup here on HBO this weekend. I think they're really trying to put their whole year on one card to beat Showtime for one weekend. Now we have, starting off here, after the six rounders, we have a 10-round featherweight fight between Nonito Donaire, who's 31-2 with 20 knockouts, and Vic Dertin.
Big rematch.
And he's 39-5 with one draw and 28 knockouts.
I mean, Dertin was like a scary guy about 5 years ago. You know, he was running roughshod over guys, goofy, crab, you know, playing manifest style.
About
and,
five losses to go.
Yeah, I mean, he stepped in there against Nonito Donaire, who was really unheralded at the time, wasn't a big name. And Donaire flattened him in one shot. I mean, he was outboxing him, which was kind of a surprise from the start. You know, you're expecting the Trinium to hunt him down. And it was the hunter became the hunted. Next thing you know, I mean, one big shot, I think it was a left hook. And down goes Darchinian. His legs are sprawled out, and he's trying to get up, and he was out of it. You know, he stopped the fight, and that was the fight that really defined Nonito Donaire. It really shot him up pound for pound rankings, and now 5 years later, we're going to do it again.
Right. And we have a bunch of 12-rounders, three 12-rounders. Nicholas Walters, undefeated at 22-0. Knockouts, fighting Alberto Garza, 25-5-1, with 20 knockouts. And that one is for the WBA World Featherweight title. That's a pretty decent fight. Then we have a couple fights with three guys who are undefeated. First one is a super featherweight bout between Mikey Garcia, who's 32-0. 27 knockouts, fighting Roman Martinez, who has just one loss, 27 wins, 16 knockouts, and two draws. In the main event, our boy Demetrius Andre, coming in 19-0 with 13 knockouts, fighting Vaines Matarossian, who is 33-0-1, 21 knockouts. Big step up here for Demetrius. Vane's been around for a while, but it doesn't make him invincible, so we'll see what happens there. But that's for the vacant WBO late middleweight title. And just so I don't have to search for a Jesus fight, there is a Jesus fight on this card. Jesus Aguanaga, 1-1-0, fighting Eric DeLeon, 5-0, 2 knockouts. Hey, that's about it. We got to get our guest on the phone. It's just about that. And Brandon Shelton. And we're definitely going to get more out of him than last week. Hmm. I can guarantee that. As long as he picks up his phone, anyway. dialing music when we need it.
Please leave your message for...
Hey, Brandon, it's Rich from Fight News Unlimited. Trying to reach you for the radio show interview. Try again in a couple minutes. All right, so that's not good. Anyway, we'll figure it out, I'm sure. Get him back on in a few minutes. Another shot, but while we're waiting, I guess we'd go over the big UFC fight this weekend. Another UFC fight night. This is the closest they've been in a while. Wednesday and Saturday, same week. But we got another big fight. And the main event there is Vitor Belfort and Dan Henderson, the TRT guys, basically. Right. On, Dan is 29-10. Belfort is 23-10. Both have their 10 losses, 20-plus wins. So it should be fairly interesting. I think Belfort's... been really all the rage lately. Just seems to be getting better and better. And Dan, been up and down. He's had better days, but he's looking to try to string some wins together and stay in the organization. So he's got a lot of pressure on him, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think there's a little more pressure on Dan. My take, just based on recent performances, I think Dan's really got to shine in this one. I don't see much option for him. I mean, if he doesn't come through here, it's, we'll see what happens, but I don't know, it's be interesting. I mean, you can, again, you can never count him out, but I just think in his last couple fights, and maybe it's everything's catching up to him. I mean, how long's the guy been doing this?
Too long.
Quite a while, and we'll see how he looks, but my money's on Vitor at this point.
All right, then. We also have a co-main event between a couple guys who really haven't been around all that long. These are Ferreira, 6-2, and Daniel Sarafian, 8-3. I don't really know a lot about either guy. I think Ferreira fought on a card I saw. It was a lot of the Brazilian tough fighters on that card, if I remember correctly, but I don't know anything about Sarafian. Then we have Rafael Cavalcante, 11-4, fighting Igor Pokrzyjak, who's 25-10. Seems like Pokrzyjak has a little bit more experience, but Cavalcante has a higher win percentage, so who knows on that one. And we got Paulo Thiago versus Brandon Thatch. That looks like a pretty interesting fight. Thiago's got 5 losses, 15 wins. Thatch has 10 wins with only 1 loss. This is a new guy, Santiago Ponzinibbio. Never heard of him. He's 18-1. Ryan LaFleur, 8-0. We got the little heathen, Jeremy Stevens. He's 21-9, coming in against Romy Mariano Vazera, who is wearing a Jason hockey mask in his profile for a sure dog. He's 13-3, and I don't think they're going to let him wear that mask in the cage, so Hope he knows that. Anyway, Godofredo Castro, also on the start. He's 9-2, fighting Sam Cecilia, 11-3. And we have another guy with a pretty big name here. Iago de Oliveira Perpetuo, 9-1-1, fighting Ari Akhmedov, undefeated, 11-0. And we have another Tiago. This time Tiago's the first name. Tiago Tavares, 17-5-1, fighting Justin Salas, who's 11-4. And finally, two more here. We've got Darren Cruikshank, 13-3, fighting Adriano Martins, 24-6. And we have Dustin Ortiz, 11-2, fighting Jose Maria Tomei, 33-4. How do you be the last fight on the card when you have 33 wins? I mean, this is the first fight on the card, technically, but it's the last fight on the list. That's 33 wins. I bet that's not the first. That hasn't happened like that in a long time for the UFC, if it ever happened at all. 33 wins. They must all be in smaller circles. But let's try our guest once again, Sheldon.
Please leave your message for...
And we'll try one more time. You guys got any other stories you want to mention before we call it a night if we can't get them on the next try?
Yeah, I was talking about, you know, the fight talk this weekend. You know, you got an interesting one on HBO. So, you know, it was my biggest thing, really. Can't wait for it.
Well, I'm just looking to BoxRec here, and I think I found our mismatch of the week in Brazil, Piranha, Brazil. And it's another Andrade. Giovanni Andrade, the main event, super bantamweight fight, is 64-13. 64 wins, 52 knockouts. 13 losses, been knocked out 9 times. And he is fighting the very unmatched, unwell-matched, I should say, Luis Alberto Severo. He's going to have a Severo beating. 7-8. His record. Grand total of 15 fights to 77 fights. Severo has 7 wins all by knockout. 8 losses, 5 of them by knockout. Let's see what else we got. We have a pretty interesting Lute Bellacar. There's a couple of fights on there. Coming out of Brooklyn, New York on Saturday, we have Dimitri Salina, 35-1-1 with 18 knockouts, and Walter Reed fighting Gabriel Bracero, 22-1 with 4 knockouts. And we have a light middleweight fight, 8-rounder, between Charlie Ota, 23-1-1, and Mike Ruiz, who's 17-7, 9 knockouts. Ruiz has 16 knockouts. Bunch of little fights on that card. Over in Tokyo, Japan, a pretty interesting card for Sunday. Shinsuke Yamanaka is fighting for the WBC Bantamweight title, Alberto Ibarra. Yamanaka has a record of 19-0-2 with 14 knockouts. Guevara is 18-1 with 6 knockouts. We got light welterweights Takahiro Ao, K.O. His record is 24-3-1 with 11 knockouts. He's fighting his pair Alejandro Milik, 14-3 with 8 knockouts. And we also have the flyweights, Roman Gonzalez, 36-0 with 30 knockouts, fighting Oscar Blankwitz, who is 32-6, 23 knockouts, 1 draw. Jorge Linares, 34-3 with 22 knockouts, will be fighting Francisco Contreras, 21-3 with 16 knockouts. That's about it. Mostly Sunday fights there. And we have a big Monday night fight from Golden Boy Promotions. I just put most of the details on this one on my blog, fightersunlimited.com there, our blog, I should say. But there's a couple interesting fights there. Our main event is Luis Ramos Jr. He's 23-1 with 10 knockouts, fighting Fidel Maldonado Jr., 16-2 with 13 knockouts. We got our boy Fernando Guerrero, who's 25-2 with 19 knockouts, fighting Raymond Gattaca, 13-1 with 8 knockouts. And that's about it. For that, let's check in one more time with the Shelton, Brandon Shelton.
Please leave your message for... Please leave your message for... Please leave your message for...
There's also a big card on Tuesday in Hollywood, Florida. It's next Tuesday. Michael Oliveira versus Norberto Gonzalez. Main event there. Oliveira is 21-1 with 16 knockouts. Norberto is 19-2 with 13 knockouts. Also on that card, we've got Unieski Gonzalez at light heavyweight. He's 12-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Jenner Guerrero, 7-1, 6 knockouts. And Yuri Foreman, also at light middleweight, is fighting an 8-rounder with Javier Gomez. Foreman's 31-2 with 8 knockouts. Gomez is 14-11 with 10 knockouts. And according to this, next Thursday, while we're on the air, actually probably way before, on the air, James Toney's fighting. James Toney is 7-8-3 with 45 knockouts. and he is one of what looks like 12 people on this card who are fighting PA. Including Brian Minto, over here, and Michael Sprott, another one, 37-21. The known fight on this card from New York Paul is a cruiserweight fight between Ben Lahimi and Moses Matomu. Lahimi is 1-0. Moses is 4-32 with 4 draws. And I think that's going to be all for us. So we have a miraculous connection. Put off once again.
Hello, this is Manzanares.
This Brandon?
No, this is Matt Manzanares.
Oh. So you're calling in for the show?
Yeah.
That's I didn't know we had scheduled it. Or anything.
Oh, huh.
You're calling in by accident. It's kind of weird. Because we're trying to get another guest on who's not answering his phone, so.
Oh, shoot.
No, you're calling in. It's kind of off the cuff, but if you're ready, I guess we can start.
Okay, yeah.
Give us a little bit of a rundown on what you got going on now.
Okay, yeah. I'm fighting November 22nd at the First Bank Center in Broomfield, Colorado, on the Resurrection Fighting Alliance 11 fight card on Access TV.
Right. And how did you get into the fight?
You know, they offered me the fight about 6 to 7 weeks ago, and I've been fighting with RFA for I think 3 times now, and you know, on a 2-fight winning streak, so they offered me a title shot, and I accepted it.
Alright. And who would you say is the toughest guy you've ever fought?
My toughest opponent so far has been probably Steve Swanson.
And what made that fight so tough?
He just came with a lot of pressure, with heavy hands, tried knocking my head off. He came out to win. It was kind of in his backyard, and, you know, it's in hostile territory, so it was a pretty tough fight.
And what would you say is your ultimate goal in mixed martial arts?
My ultimate goal is to get into the UFC for sure, and claim their world title. Just to be the best in the world at my weight division, and become world champion.
And what's the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
The most important thing is probably, of course the training, but, you know, making the sacrifices away, taking time away from the family and, focus on the training and the fight specifically. So that's probably the hardest thing.
And do you have a particular style that you lean on, or a particular strike that you like to throw a lot?
Yeah, usually I'm looking to end the fight, with a knockout. But you know, I train all areas of the game, and you know, as long as I get a finish and a win, I'm happy for it. So.
And is there anybody out there you really want to fight more than anybody else in the world?
You know, I just want to fight my opponent that I'm trying to fight to, you know, right now. Zach Makovsky, probably like the number one ranked fighter in my weight division that's not signed by the UFC, and you know, I'm just looking forward to fighting him, putting on a great show, and you know, coming home with the belt.
And what do you like most about being in the fight game?
What I like most is, you know, the dedication part and the sacrifice and, you know, the dedication I put towards myself and my body to be able to compete, you know, at a high level on a big stage, you know, come fight night. You know, the thing I like most is, you know, being able to test myself in deep waters and, you know, in a lot of ways in life. And, you know, one of the hardest ways is, you know, through fighting. So, you know, that's kind of what I like the most about it.
And do you have any fighters out there that you watch all the time? You have to see them when they fight? Favorite fighters of all time? Anything like that?
You know, BJ Penn's always been my favorite fighter of all time. You know, I never miss any of his fights. I could watch him over and over. You know, I'm really, really excited about, you know, the lighter weight guys now. There's just so much talent out there now. You know, it's hard to keep track of everyone, but it's good to see all the new and upcoming talent as well, for sure.
Now, how long have you been watching MMA as a fan before you got involved?
I watched the very first UFC when I was 8 years old with my brother and my dad, and I've been a fan ever since. And I most recently, when I started training MMA about 5-6 years ago is when, you know, I really took hold of the sport and really started to study it. So about 6 years ago, consistently.
And what do you think about the organization you've been working for, RFA? About those guys?
I think they're great. You know, everyone that I've worked with, you know, as far as from the media to the president, and they're really great. You know, they've helped me out a lot. They put me on a big stage, and you know, really tried to get my name out there, and you know, they've really taken care of me, given me very tough fights, and being able to let me prove myself, you know, on a national and a world level, that, you know, that my fighting style is, you know, one of the best. So, you know, they've been great to me, and you know, I can only say so much, but you know, they're awesome.
What do you know about your opponent there, Zach? Other than, you know, him being high ranked, do you know anything about his style in his fights or anything like that? Respect at all?
Yeah. You know, I've watched a lot of his fights. I've kind of been following him ever since he was in Bellator, and you know, he's a very tough opponent. Very, very good grappler and wrestler. He likes to keep it on his feet too. He doesn't mind throwing punches and kicks, and but his grappling skills are top notch, and he's going to be a handful.
And what do you think about how far MMA has come? Obviously, you've been watching it for a while. It's changed quite a bit since the first UFC there, obviously. What do you see in the whole atmosphere? Like, most about changed, and what do you think still needs work?
Let's see. I don't know. You know, I can't really say what really needs to be worked on, because you know, every fight night or every month, you know, every time there's fights on, there's guys in there that are just getting better, and there's really a lot of talent out there that you know, there's everyone keeps bringing their A game, and you know, guys are starting to get really good all around. So, you know, I don't know what's going to change, but I do know that, you know, everyone's getting better, and you know, it's getting real exciting for sure.
And what do you like most about the changes?
You know, just everyone's well-rounded, you know. There's guys in there that are great wrestlers that, you know, come and knock guys out. And then there's really great strikers in there that, you know, can submit guys too now. And, you know, that I think that's, you know, what it takes to be a complete mixed martial artist. You know, you have to know all areas of the game, and you have to be well prepared, not only physically but mentally, for sure.
Right. Now, what's a typical training day for you? Do you do multiple disciplines in one day? Do you do it all together? How do you basically keep it all together and separate at the same time?
You know, some days are different than others. You know, mainly conditioning every day, or just about every day, and you know, technique. You know, you gotta keep reviewing the basics over and over and keep drilling. And then there's days that are just grinders where you gotta put in the work, put in the hard sparring and the hard wrestling. So, you know, every day is kind of different, but still the same. Where you know, I have a big fight coming up, so I'm definitely putting in a lot of conditioning and a lot of hard round sparring and wrestling. So, you know, it varies from day to day, but mainly it's kind of all the same, you know.
Right. And what do you think about the future of the sport as far as, you know, kids getting involved and stuff like that, and, you know, the next generation of fighters coming up?
Yeah, I mean, the future's bright, you know. With kids getting involved in it now, you know, there's just going to be so much talent out there. You know, I recently got my kids into martial arts and to wrestling, and, you know, I wish I would have done it at their age, because I know once they get into their teen years, you know, they're going to be well-rounded mixed martial artists already. And, you know, it's going to be a scary thing. It's going to be a young man's sport, I think. You know, so, you know, kids getting into it now, you know, it's very good for the sport. You know, I think there's a lot of great things still to come, and, you know, a lot of new talent's going to be born, and, I think it's going to be real good.
Yeah, geez, I mean, I knew about the sport when I was in high school, but it was still pretty much barbaric. From everybody I heard anything about it, it was still very loosely regulated, and I had never even seen a match until 2006, I watched it on TV for the first time. And I wrestled in high school. I boxed in college. So I would have definitely thought about doing it if it was more mainstream at the time when I wrestled. But it's nice because a lot of these kids who wrestle and don't really have the option of going to, you know, to go do Greco-Roman as a pro. You know, what are you going to do that? You got to either go to the Olympics or just give it up. I know.
Yeah, definitely.
Coming up, have had that, you know, to watch their whole lives. So it's good. It's going to be good to see some of these big champion wrestlers choose MMA.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's a good thing. You know, for you know, these young athletes, you know, that want to make a career out of it. You know, I'm not saying that. You know, it's the best thing because I mean, fighting's tough. You know, a lot of it's mental, and you know, of course, you have to be a good physical athlete. But you know, if your head's not always on in the game, then you know you're gonna break some time. And but you know, I know if you have, you know, a good family structure and you know, a good belief in yourself, you know, good things will come. But you know, hopefully, you know, in the next couple of years or so, you know, fighters will, you know, start making a lot more money. And you know, I mean, some do now, but you know, hopefully, you know, in these next couple of years and stuff, and especially with these kids and the next generation, you know, they'll be able to really look at it as a career path and a career that they're going to be able to excel on. Not only, you know, as like just for an athlete, but you know, financially and stuff like that.
Right. And how has your pace situation been? Have you pretty much gotten what you need to train and fight and all that from the paychecks and sponsorships and all that?
Yeah, it's been good. You know, it's been good. I can't complain. You know, with as bad as the economy is now, you know, everyone's having to work another job, you know, two jobs. And, you know, fortunately for me, you know, I chose fighting, and that's kind of what, you know, I'm scraping by. And but you know, with all the help that I've gotten, you know, from RFA and my sponsors and that, you know, I'm doing well. You know, I can't complain. I'm able to feed my family and stuff, and so you know, that's all I care about. And but yeah, it's going well.
Cool. Anybody else got any questions? I do have two co-hosts here, man. Anyone?
Yeah, this is man, this has been a great interview. Great stuff here, and it's nice to talk to someone that's been around since the early days. We're on a little different end of the age spectrum here, but we both remember those days of UFC 1, you know, how wild things were back then, that rawness, that style versus style. And you know, when I got into all this stuff back in the mid-60s, I'm dating myself with my age here, but back then it was kind of like one style and that was it, and there was all that talk about style versus style. And you know, it seems like we've seen the sport initially dominated by jiu-jitsu, then the wrestlers came in, then the strikers learned how to sprawl and brawl, and we've seen so much. There's more conditioning and everything. And you touched on a subject earlier about the mental aspect of this game. And I think a lot of people ignore that, and I've just been around for so long, both as, you know, in the little bit of fighting I've done and the training and just being a huge fan of the sport and a student of the game, that the mental aspect is so important. I mean, I've seen it make guys win. I've seen it make guys lose. Now, in addition to coming in with confidence and really training hard, do you do anything special, like any kind of meditation or creative visualization or like any other way to get yourself in the right frame of mind, or you just feel that your training takes care of that for you?
You know, I'm real spiritual. You know, I'm really into God, and, you know, I know that without Him, you know, none of this would be possible. I get, you know, a lot of my strength just from praying and thanking God for, you know, being able to wake up and to provide for my family and to be able to just go train and do what I love to do, you know, and, you know, I don't just do it for my family, but I do it for God, because I know that he has blessed me with, you know, so many great gifts in life. But, you know, as far as that, you know, I don't want to get, like, all religious on you guys and everything like that, but, you know, honestly, you know, I do this all for God, and he's, you know, basically he's done this all for me. And, you know, I just want to go out there and glorify his name and, you know, really really show the world that, you know, God has been with me. And you know, win, lose, or draw, that, you know, I'm always going to be able to look up and thank him for everything in life. And, you know, when you ask him, when you ask him, you know, to help me out, you know, he gives you difficult times to be able to pass through them. That way you can get stronger in life. So, you know, a lot of my mental focus is, you know, just being able to stay strong and believing in God, that knowing that he's going to take care of me just like he's always have. And, you know, yeah, just staying strong mentally. You got to, because if not, you know, you could break at any moment in the sport, especially when you're trying to compete at a high level against very, very good competition. And so, yeah, I try to stay really, really faithful to God, and you know, just to be strong that way.
Sure. Well, that's great that you've got that spiritual and mental foundation, because if that's not right, I think you can do all the technique and all the physical cardio stuff and the strength, and if your mind's made of mush and your spirit's weak, it's just not going to matter when you get in there. And it sounds like you're very well grounded for such a young guy. I mean, really, that's
true.
I'm glad you found that good foundation, and it's been working great for you so far, and I can only urge you to keep up just the path you're going on, keep working hard, and I know you will. I can just tell from talking to you. So,
absolutely. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's good to hear that.
Sure.
Now, Matt, is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to, say hello to, or thank out there?
I just want to give a shout out to, you know, my team, all my trainers and, my coaches, my training partners that's been helping me throughout this whole camp and, throughout my whole career. You know, I wouldn't be where I'm at, if it weren't for them. You know, my team Black Dragon, the Farm Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and, Team Wildman. Also to, my manager, Ricky Vasquez at Phenom Management. My sponsors, Brawling Combat Gear, Smart Sports, Eliminate Brand, let's see who else, Laramie County Chiropractic, and, you know, all my sponsors that's always been there for me and backed me up, and my family for sure, you know. They, not only do I sacrifice for them, but they sacrifice everything for me, and, you know, I wouldn't be where I'm at if it weren't for them. So, you know, and thanks to you guys too for letting me come on the show.
Sure, anytime. You saved us actually tonight.
Right on, man. Cool.
Worked out
That's
perfectly.
Good, yeah.
So I guess there's God in everything, huh?
Right on, man.
There we
cool.
go. There we go. That worked just perfect.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah, cool.
I mentioned all that. I was just saying about 2 minutes before we connected with you, we were trying to call the other guy, and I said, well, unless we have a miraculous connection, that's going to be it.
Yeah.
There you go, lifesaver. Lifesaver. Cool, man.
Any final thoughts or predictions for your big fight with Zach there?
You know, my final thoughts, my prediction is, you know, I'm going to go out there and fight my ass off and, you know, come out with the win and bring that belt back home to Wyoming.
All right, cool. Awesome. Right, great chatting with you. Keep in touch. We'll keep following you, and best of luck trying to get to the UFC. Just keep stringing wins together. I'm sure it'll happen for you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
All right.
You're welcome.
Good luck, and keep working hard.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You have a good one.
Thanks. Take care.
See ya. Yeah, that's Matt Manzanares. Spell that if you want to check his record. M-A-N-Z-A-N-A-R-E-F. Probably should have asked him where you can find him on Facebook and all that, but I guess now you can Google him. He has his last name. So that's all we got there. We got about 3 minutes left in the show period now, so apologize to anybody who is looking for Brandon Shelton. And I just got a message from Bill Smallwood, and it turns out they had him hanging a large Christmas tree for the city of Oklahoma City. So that's why he was indisposed. But now he's saying he never got the call. But anyway, we'll figure it out. We'll get him on. We'll get him more than a question out of him one of these days. And until next week, I think that's all for
well,
me.
Well, hold on. I have a couple silly quotes. I've been waiting all night for this. Someone, you know, you sent me that Don Fry interview, and someone's comment on that one, how is it possible that Don Fry is also Jack Daniels, Wyatt Earp, the Marlboro Man, and the guy in the brawny paper towels all rolled in one? Okay. And there's also a rumor that Toronto's crack-smoking mayor wants to do a little MMA fighting. And the last... Yeah, that's a topic for a whole other time. But I'll leave you with this one. Ronda Rousey said that under the right circumstance, she could defeat Cain Velasquez.
What?
So, yeah, believe it or not, she said under the right circumstance, she'd get in there and she could catch Cain. So with that hideous thought, I guess that's about all I have, and we'll let that turn around and maybe kick it around a bit next week.
On that note, too, Dwight Howard told Dana White that he would fight in the cage for $10 million. So, basketball star Dwight Howard. I don't think that's going to happen. It's probably an important joke. They did a whole article on that today on one of the websites. And that interview with Don Fry, look that up. One time he gets asked, you know, what about these guys? Are they as tough as the guys back in the day? And he's just like, no, not at all.
Yeah.
Didn't really elaborate too much, but it's just a great interview with, I forget the lady's name, but MMA Fighting, I think it was on. I don't know. But anyway, we'll play some clips out of that next week, maybe. Buy some stuff from that. All right, Blog Talk Radio lady is on our ass, so we're going to call.
All right, guys, well, enjoy the fights this weekend. Lots of good stuff. Talk about it next week.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend, guys. Have a good weekend, baby.
Adios.
All right.